A big warm welcome to the Baltic Triangle podcast. And this is quite an important episode for us because it's our 50th episode, isn't it, Mick?
Yes, it is, Mark. It feels like quite an achievement given that so many podcasts break onto the scene with a bang and then disappear with a whimper, but not us. So it is good. We were going to do something special today, weren't we? Put the best laid plans of mice and men. So we'll just shout about it on air and maybe we'll do something special for the 51st or 52nd.
Watch this space. Well, in today's 50th anniversary episode, then we'll be hearing from the man behind what will be the country's, maybe even the world's, first ever DAB radio station for people suffering from dementia, and it's being set up right here in Liverpool.
A passion for radio obviously is a really good starting point. There's not necessarily any experience required. We can guide people through. We provide compliance training, which is an Ofcom necessity requirement. Our own version of compliance training will involve dementia training and a little bit of studio training. So yeah, just anyone who has a passion for radio or an interest in it and wants to get involved.
More from Nat in a minute. And Mark's been hearing from a multidisciplinary artist from London who's showcasing her considerable talents in Liverpool with an exhibition in Dorothy on Jamaica Street and something called the Fandango Discoteca at the Albert Dock.
This whole body of work is about how you carry people with you, you know, and like the people in my family were such big characters, and I've got so many memories that, again, like that live within me about togetherness and storytelling. And when they were all alive, like I've really had to find my voice like since they've been gone, because I'm the youngest, and you know, they're very much like really good at taking up space.
So Mick, 50 not out, as they say in cricket terms. How about that then, eh?
Yeah, we're pleased about this, aren't we? As I say, we were going to plan something special and of course nothing happened. But thanks for everybody who's been listening over the years. It's been good to hear from you now and then. We're always looking for suitable interviewees. And we're not just Baltic Triangle, and despite the name of the podcast, we're looking for real movers and shakers, not politicians necessarily, from all over the Liverpool City region. And we've got some today that are crackers. Now, we are still looking for a business partner stroke sponsor. So if you want to get in touch with us with a view to hearing about what we can offer, then do email us.
And the email address is info@baltictrianglepodcast.com. That's info@baltictrianglepodcast.com. As Mick said, you know, it seems that we have branched out across the region now more. We started out as mainly a focus for some of the amazing things that were happening in the Baltic Triangle area, and we still do. But as Mick rightly pointed out, as far as we're concerned, there's so much happening in the city right now that we have to spread our wings, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And that's businesses, that's charities, that's CICs, that's cultural organisations. Anything you've got that you think is interesting, do get in touch with us. We can't guarantee we'll feature you, but if we like your story, we will. Now, there's been a fair amount in the news recently about the demise of traditional media like live TV and radio. And so it's perhaps surprising, in a good way, that we can announce, exclusively I might add, a new DAB radio station that will be based in Liverpool, tailored specifically for people with dementia and, by extension, their families and carers. Merseyside Dementia Friendly Radio has been running as an internet radio station for a few years, but recently heard the news that they've been granted a DAB licence by Ofcom, a considerable achievement, believe me. MDFR will become the UK's first dementia-friendly radio station on DAB, and possibly the world, according to the man behind it. So I caught up with Nat Gavin, who explained the ethos behind the station and why he got involved in the first place.
I had some experience with dementia in the family. My gran had dementia. I was looking for something for her to listen to. That didn't have the distressing elements of some of the radio that was on. And when I didn't find anything, I decided to set one up. But I also had a connection to the dementia community because my mum had dementia. She was diagnosed before my gran and was an activist, organiser, ambassador for dementia in locally and internationally. So I was already plugged in through supporting her at various dementia events.
And what was your mum's name?
Gina Shaw. She was an ambassador for the Alzheimer's Society. She was part of an advertising campaign they did where she was singing Get By With A Little Help From My Friends. It was all over telly for a bit, so I couldn't watch telly for a bit.
And when you talk about the more distressing aspects of radio, do you mean news? What do you mean, Nat?
Yeah, well, there can be like content that can be distressing, like you say, like news, adverts can often have elements of conflict in them. You've got insurance adverts with cars crashing or people shouting. But then also things like sound design. A lot of radio stations will have station identifiers or jingles that have really choppy sound design, things moving about from left to right, and it can be disorientating for people who might have perception issues. Also like pop culture references, you know, if people are experiencing time shifting where they feel that they're at an earlier stage of their life and there's people talking about things that are currently going on or using compound words that, you know, people always making up new words or phrases or references to memes and things, and it can just be a bit confusing or make you feel irrelevant if you're not part of that.
Now, you're going to be moving to DAB radio soon, but you have been an internet radio station for some time, haven't you? So what's been the reaction like from your listeners?
Yeah, we've had a good response so far. We launched 4 years ago during lockdown, so it was very difficult to gauge people's, to get feedback from people. I'd join Zoom groups of people living with dementia and ask them to listen to the station and then feedback at the next meeting. But obviously the nature of dementia is that they wouldn't always remember to listen to it or to what their feelings were about it. But yeah, more recently, we've had some really good feedback from people with dementia, carers and professionals. Everybody thinks it's a great idea. But obviously internet radio is the least suitable format for our audience because you've got to be able to use devices.
So if I'm listening to your radio station, what would mark it out as different from all the other radio stations on the dial? Presumably you're not going to have news on it. So what would be different?
The dementia friendliness comes from, like I say, eliminating news, adverts, sonic clutter. But then we also add things like self-care reminders, so just little gentle reminders throughout the day to eat and drink. We talk about, you know, we'll be off to bed soon kind of thing to just see, you know, you're not bossing people around to do things, but you're just gently kind of urging them to do these things. We focus a lot more on reminiscence as well. So we're playing music from the latest we get is the 80s. So it's like the 80s and back to the 30s. We have like, so the closest we get to having news is something we call the notice board, which is like a what's on guide, but it's just focusing on the local dementia community. So information about dementia cafes or meetings or events that are going on in the dementia community.
And does the radio station aim for the families of people with dementia and the carers as well?
Well, in theory, it's meant for everyone. I mean, a lot of my friends that listen to it love it because there's no adverts and there's a really nice selection of music on there. It's not specifically catering. We don't appeal to the carers on air. We're planning on setting up a complimentary set of podcasts that are focused more on carers so that they can be listened to by choice away from the main broadcast that's going to be going out 24 hours a day.
In terms of the music that you're playing, is it always calm? How would that differ from, say, Capital or Greatest Hits or Radio Merseyside or whatever?
Yeah, it's not always calm, but it is programmed with the day of a person with dementia in mind. So people can experience something known as sundowning. So it's sometimes for an hour or two before the sun goes down, people with dementia can start to become agitated and anxious. So it was suggested to us a long time ago that we maybe start playing more upbeat music just around then, and then start to tone it down a little bit. So it's kind of meeting them where they are, so it's not just jarring them with chill out music when they're feeling anxious. So it's kind of trying to guide them away from the anxiety by like meeting them where they are with more kind of upbeat, like rock and roll kind of music. And then, guiding them, trying to calm it down from there onward.
And is it on 24/7?
Yeah, 24 hours a day. We have been experimenting with playing more kind of ambient music at night, which isn't necessarily fitting with playing music from people's childhoods and things. We haven't had much feedback about the nighttime music, so it's still a little bit experimental. Yeah, we're looking for some feedback.
It must be quite difficult looking for feedback because of the very nature of the audience that you're aiming at. How much of a challenge has that been, and will it be when you move to DAB?
It's a massive challenge. Luckily, as I said, I'm plugged into the local dementia community, people that run post-diagnostic groups and various other groups for people with dementia, and the local service users reference forum and the local Dementia Action Alliance. But the idea is that once we've launched on DAB, we'll then do another assessment of whether what we're doing is dementia-friendly and if it's suitable for our listeners.
And will you have any interviews on the radio station, Nat?
Maybe not interviews, but we will have programmes of people talking about local history or just some kind of guided reminiscence, people talking about things from the past. Probably not interviews. We did, when we first started, have interviews with researchers and people working in dementia-related organisations, but I felt like some of it was maybe a little bit too heavy or a little bit too dry for our main broadcast, so that's where the podcasts will come in.
At the moment, if I tune into MDFR radio, it'll be mainly music I hear, won't it? But you have got presenters lined up, haven't you?
Yeah, when we launch on DAB, we'll have about 8 hours a day with presenters to introduce the music, give a little bit of trivia about the music, and you know, some light chat. At the moment, it is just music 24 hours a day. We do have the reality orientation, which is like a fancy way of saying hourly updates of what time it is and what time of day it is. Because if you just say it's 7 o'clock, some people might have switched their 24-hour clock. So we say what day it is, what time it is, what time of day it is. And we have the self-care reminders in place. They're just automated at the moment.
Will these presenter-led programs be live, or will they be pre-recorded? Will they be repeated?
It'll all be pre-recorded because of the nature of it. We're wanting people from the dementia community to be presenting or being involved with the running of the radio station. So the least pressure we can have on carers and people living with dementia, the better. So, and on me, you know, it's a lot less pressure. It's more work because it involves editing as well and uploading. But yeah, it'll all be pre-recorded.
So it's perfectly possible, is it, that some of the presenters that we'll hear on the radio station will suffer from dementia themselves?
Yeah, it'll be people living with dementia and carers, because obviously they'll know more what people want, what music might be suitable. And then it gives them the added sense of agency, because, yeah, a lot of people living with dementia and maybe even more so carers can feel quite helpless. I say this from personal experience, and doing the radio station is a way to feel like you're contributing something. So we're hoping to give that experience to people involved with the station.
And what's the ultimate aim? Because if you're working for a commercial station, one of the key aims is to make money, isn't it? And to, you know, get more listeners. And if you're working for the BBC, it's maybe inform, educate and entertain. So what are the key aims of MDFR radio?
Just to make life a bit easier and more enjoyable for people affected by dementia. We're not for profit. We don't have advertising, so we're not driven by that. Obviously, we need money, but we're just driven by like compassion and consideration for people.
I've got to ask you about the financial side of it. Where did you get the money from to set this up?
And are you still looking for money now to keep it going?
Initially, I self-funded with some of my own money, and then I got some inheritance from my grandmother passing. So I put that into the station for our initial bits of equipment. But yes, we need a lot more. With this transition to DAB, we're moving into a new premises. We need a lot more equipment, soundproofing, acoustic treatment, recording equipment, editing equipment, servers. There's a lot of things. So we need a ton of money.
And your studio is going to be on Albion Street in Everton, isn't it? So you're right at the heart of a community there. How important is that?
Yeah, it's definitely important. I mean, part of being a community radio station, as well as it being a requirement from Ofcom, but also it's vital to the relevance of the station to be in a community space. And obviously being in North Liverpool, it's classed as a deprived area, so it's nice to be working there and cheaper than working in town.
So talk us through the money side of it again. I gather you've launched a crowdfunding campaign. How do people find out about that, and how much do you need from it?
We're asking for about £25,000, which seems like a lot, but will just about cover all the things that we need in the shorter term. I did write down the address for it, but it was far too complicated to read out on air. So if people go to our website or our social media, Merseyside Dementia Friendly Radio, we'll find us everywhere. There'll be links to our crowdfunder campaign on there and other ways to donate on our website.
You're also looking for presenters as well, aren't you? So what qualities, what skills do people need to have if they're interested in becoming a presenter on the radio station?
A passion for radio obviously is a really good starting point. There's not necessarily any experience required. We can guide people through. We provide compliance training, which is an Ofcom necessity requirement. Our own version of compliance training will involve dementia training and a little bit of studio training. So yeah, just anyone who has a passion for radio or an interest in it and wants to get involved. Probably no like techno DJs, because it's mostly 80s and backwards, unless you just want to play Kraftwerk.
Can your presenters choose the music they want, or is that something that you do because it needs to be of a specific nature, doesn't it, as you've already explained?
Yeah, I think there are going to have to be some guidelines. We'll have a massive library of music on our server that people can choose from. I think it'll be part of the training to talk about what the guidance for it is. Probably not things that are too obscure, because the idea is that it'll be reminiscence for people. So it might be music from their childhood or earlier in their life. So yeah, there will be some freedom of choice within certain parameters.
And where will people be able to listen to it? So, like, it's Merseyside, so presumably you'll be able to hear it in Wirral, will you? Southport, Warrington, Widnes, St Helens, Bootle?
Yeah, the local DAB multiplex, who are responsible for relaying the signal around the region, have got a map on their website with highlighted areas, and it looks to be covering most of, if not all, of Merseyside and Liverpool City region. So yeah, people should be able to find it on DAB, just searching for MDFR.
I worked in radio for 30 years, and I would never have thought 10 years ago, never mind 30 years ago, that someone would want to set up a specific radio station for a specific demographic, like people in the dementia community. Things are changing, aren't they, fast?
Yeah, I think there is a lot more niche radio, which maybe came about because of internet radio. Everybody could have their own radio station, but then I think a lot of that became oversaturated and obviously isn't the ideal setup for ourselves. But yeah, I think you were telling me about another really niche radio station just for workies.
Yeah, Fix It Radio, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's really interesting what kind of things people see that are missing from radio broadcast. I did used to do an extremely niche radio station, internet radio station, that just broadcasted into the toilet of a music venue and online, but it was more about the toilet.
That is what you call niche listening.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by, you know, if you go into a bank, they'll have their own radio station, or in supermarkets and things. And even though I knew it wasn't the case, I liked to think that it was just a weird little fella sat in the back in a little room playing all the music. And that kind of job really appealed to me.
Are there any other dementia-friendly radio stations in the UK?
So there's a dementia-focused radio station up in the Isle of Lewis, Deepness Dementia Radio, who are amazing. Ron Coleman and his wife, whose name escapes me, they run that. That's incredible. They delve a bit more into the experiences of people with dementia, which is another reason I don't really feel like we need to cover it in our broadcast, because they do it magnificently. There's also Music for Dementia. That's more of a series of playlists that you can tap into through their website. And I think there's one called Sound Memories, based in Wales, which is more focused on people's stories and field recordings of nature. It's in like the countryside of Wales. Really interesting idea. It's mostly staffed by carers and people living with dementia as well, I think. But so far as I can find, we will be the only dementia-friendly DAB station in the country, possibly the world.
That's some achievement.
Yeah, I'm quite chuffed about it, yeah. Obviously, it'd be great to set up others. One of my intentions is to help others set up their own local DAB or internet stations for their areas, their counties. I've had some interest for Lancashire and Manchester. So once I figure out what I'm doing, I'll try and help other people do it.
So if people want to find out more about how they can financially contribute to MDFR Radio or become a presenter or just find out more about it in general, what's the best thing for them to do?
We can go to our website and contact us through there. Or social media, any of our social medias. You can just email me directly as well. It's nat@mdfr.co.uk.
Nat Gavin there from MDFR. Mick, what an amazing story. How long did you spend down there with him? You must have been down there for ages, you being a radio buff and all that.
Yeah, he really interesting guy. Heart's definitely in the right place and his head is in the right place as well. They're building this new studio in Everton, so it's at the heart of the community. It won't be live programmes, as he said, it'll be recorded. But it was interesting to hear about what will make it different to other radio stations. No news, no sharp edits like you get with jingles and all the rest of it. So best of luck to him. I've heard on the grapevine they've got a few name presenters lined up as well, so that'll be really interesting. They're hoping to be up and running in May. Let's hope they are, but even if it slips a little bit. It's a real first, it's a genuine first for Merseyside, which is always good to hear. And he thinks it might be the first one in the UK. There are dementia-friendly internet radio stations, but none that have got a DAB licence. So I think a few people will be looking at this and thinking, I wonder if this is going to work in our part of the country as well.
Well, he's put the call out as well for presenters potentially to get in touch. So definitely watch that space if it's something that you feel might be of interest to you, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to get hold of Nat, he's on Nat, which is spelt N-A-T. So it's nat@mdfr.co.uk. That's nat@mdfr.co.uk.
Dementia's a really cruel condition, isn't it, as well, because it robs people of a recognisable loved one, and it's painful. Having experienced some of that myself, this is definitely going to play a massive role in helping people across the community and members of the family as well, you know?
Yeah, it's as cruel on the members of the family and the carers as it is on the people who suffer from it. And we all know someone who's either had dementia or who knows someone with dementia. So it's really something to look forward to, and I hope it's a massive success for Nat and his team.
Annie Frost Nicholson is a multidisciplinary artist from London who's visiting Liverpool for a first ever UK solo show. which is being staged at Dorothy on Jamaica Street, right here in the Baltic Triangle. Her show is called All of Your Textures Live Inside of Me, and like a lot of her work, it's designed to smash the many taboos that are connected with the human condition. And believe me, if the exhibition at Dorothy is anything to go by, it certainly does that, with much of it focusing on the ultimate taboo for most of us, and that's death. Annie suffered the devastating loss of some close members of her family 12 years ago when she was 27, and is using her experiences in her art. I managed to catch up with Annie across her very busy schedule on the opening day of the exhibition, where I talked to her about what exactly the exhibition is all about.
I'm Annie Frost-Nicholson, a multidisciplinary artist. I do a lot of work about the things that people don't really want to talk about. So kind of everything between life and death, but a lot of focus on grief and the different intersections of loss and, you know, how we exist in the world, really, on a kind of complex level.
Annie, for anyone who's unfamiliar with your work, a lot of your work deals with the complexities of the human condition, doesn't it? How does that reflect in what you're in Liverpool at the moment to do?
I'm here with my first solo show. I don't really do many gallery shows, so it's kind of a new direction, and it's called All of Your Textures Live Inside of Me. And it's really like a kind of reflection on how you carry the loss of people who have loved you unconditionally when they leave this earth. And, you know, how I've sort of spent my adult life really a bit sort of caught between life and death and, you know, sort of holding those people who are like inside of me, who've made me, but also sort of trying to forge a life with living and trying to build relationships. It's a really, really tricky balance to kind of hold. And I guess this has been a very intimate body of work to make, because normally I do, you know, a lot of public art, which I've been able to kind of hide behind in many ways. And this is very different because it's really kind of out there in a really granular way.
It's very brave of you. It's very bold of you. I know in the past you've had a kind of a pseudonym with the Fandango Kid. So it's really, really nice to see you alongside your work as well. And your work at the moment is being shown in conjunction with Dorothy, who are very, very familiar to us at the Baltic Triangle podcast. Tell us a little bit about the exhibition itself. It's going to be in their office in Jamaica Street, as well as other venues, isn't it?
I've met Ali and Jim kind of quite by chance, because I came into Dorothy like quite a few years ago. And it just so happened that every time I came back to Liverpool, I'd pop in to Dorothy and we'd always have a really nice chat. And I think we've got a few friends in common from different parts of the industry. And then I last year discovered that I had a new sister totally out of the blue, and I brought her in here. We look exactly the same. It's really crazy. And I introduced her to Ali, and we kind of started talking. And then we sort of met again and talked about maybe doing something. And it's just, they've been like the most amazing hosts and now friends. And they're just so generous and incredible. And it's been such a beautiful spirit, which I think has opened up. I'm very solitary in my work, so in this kind of work particularly, and it's opened up something in me that's just put my nerves at bay, really.
How have you found it so far being in Liverpool then?
I just really love it. I think, you know, like I was saying, that this whole body of work is about how you carry people with you, you know, and like the people in my family were such big characters, and I've got so many memories that, again, like that live within me about togetherness and storytelling. And when they were all alive, like I've really had to find my voice like since they've been gone, because I'm the youngest, and you know, they're very much like really good at taking up space. And so I guess this is like finding my voice, which, you know, and there's a crushing irony in many ways that I found that without them being here. But I'm really proud, and it's really special, you know. And like I said, you know, we've got a new sister, and she's coming today with all of her friends. She's from Blackpool, and you know, we've just discovered her. And I just sort of think, God, I was sort of having a little chat with my dad this morning when I was on the train. I was like, I bet you wouldn't have imagined this, like that, you know, like, yeah. And we've got another thing down at the Albert Dock, which is like a little mini disco. There's a little trail between the two, and like this disco is a place to like come and dance out your day, your grief, your feelings. And I'm really excited to see it in the context of Liverpool, because I just always love coming here because everyone talks to you and they tell you their stories, and it's half of me. Like, I, you know, grew up with a really vivacious, massive character of a father, and it's half of me, so it brings out something in me you've got a real heart warmth for.
You've touched on the Fandango Discoteca, which I believe is going to be just by the Beatles Experience on the Albert Dock. Talk to me about what it is and how it works.
It's been a really beautiful collaboration with some guys in Berlin. Originally, it was designed by a Slovenian architect who's in his late 80s now, who I've had the real honour of meeting because it's been like a year and a bit of conversations. And that's why we love this project so much, because it's truly collaborative. It's really been about developing the legacy of Sasha. Sasha Mechtig is the guy who designed it. He designed them and they went all kind of out through like the Eastern Bloc in the 60s, and you could hire them, well, you could rent them to have your business in there. So they were like chip shops, coffee shops, kiosks, cafes, all sorts of things. And it was like a really amazing kind of way of having some entrepreneurial spirit during the Cold War, which was really hard. So Sasha's like this incredible architect, and we've been having this ongoing conversation, and the guys in Berlin are perpetuating his legacy. So to bring it here has been really meaningful, and also within the context of the cultural history of Liverpool and the nostalgia and the connection to music, you know, sensory link, conjuring up all of your past, present, future. You know, it's just so amazing.
And how does it work then? How do you interact with the actual space inside it?
It's a micro kiosk. You go in, they're modular. You can shut yourself in. You can see out, but no one can see in. So you kind of have this really nice vulnerability of like knowing that you're, you know, like the best dance floors, like you're together, but you can also be anonymous and you can kind of dance out whatever your story is. Like everyone brings their own story to a dance floor. We've really considered those elements because dancing for me has been so key in like moving through grief. So we really wanted to consider like all of those sensory elements. You go in, you can fit 8 people in there, and it's also a space of joy for many people. Like you go in with your mates and you're just able to like celebrate and be together. And it's just a really amazing spirit of like togetherness and unity and, you know, release. And or you can, you know, go in alone, or, you know, it's and you can choose your song, and the song kind of connects to, you know, whatever that then means for you.
Let's get back maybe to the exhibition itself then. It runs from the 19th of February until the 12th of April. Talk to me about the different elements that are going to be contained within it then. We've kind of covered the discotheca on the dock. Let's talk about the exhibition itself.
The exhibition has been like a really nice exploration of my practice. There's a lot of painting, which kind of references really important times of my life. A lot of, I guess, architectural references that have like been revisited. So you kind of see like a lot of really bright like shop fronts and things like that. Like my family lived in Portugal for kind of 20 years. So we've all got this very strong connection to like the south of Portugal. And, you know, we've got a very sort of strong Southern European kind of connection. And all of my memories are sitting around a long table at their house sort of outside. So, you know, there's a lot of references to Lisbon, to the south. This kind of nostalgia, but also kind of rewritten in the way that I want to hold it. So, you know, there's a lot I could say about each painting, but I also don't, you know, that's if I'm invited to. I also want people to make their own associations with it. There's also a lot of collage and a lot of re-experiencing the world in their absence, which I've done a lot of because we had so many connections to New York. Many of them died in New York, and my best friend lives there, so I've been revisiting that, you know, city and sort of trying to build it back into my life. Lisbon too, you know, we moved to Lisbon, my partner and I, 2022 for a bit, and trying to not have these places that have once meant so much to me, the episode of my life that was once with my family, and not have them off limits, to sort of try to reintegrate them, because for a long time they've just been too painful to even talk about, you know.
I think you're incredibly brave. I think the other thing to consider about what you do and how you do it, in some small way, what it does is it helps people to cope. How much do you feel that when you're doing a piece of work?
I think the work itself, particularly the public art, but also this, is sort of an offering and an invitation always to people to kind of engage with it as they are on any given day. So, you know, you don't have to come feeling like full of joy or full of grief. You can just literally show up as you are on any given day and sort of respond as you feel. And we sort of try to structure all of the public art, certainly where there are really amazing professional mental health kind of workers who can hold that and support that and like provide so many resources to kind of deal with it, because my offering is the work. beyond that, it's my lived experience. So we really try to build that out with people as broadly as possible and, you know, try to hold that for them because it can bring up a lot.
I had a very quick scoop around the exhibition myself, and I'm going to make sure that I see it in a little bit more detail at some point over the next month or so. But it's quite an emotional experience. It was for me anyway. Do you find that with a lot of people that come and see your work?
I think that the film that's included in it sort of really, I think Ali and Jim have sort of direct people towards that first role because it gives the sort of full context. But I also think with or without that, I want people to connect as they feel with it. I don't want to tell them too much. I don't want to tell them how they should feel. Because one thing I know is that grief is like not prescriptive. This is, you know, I don't, you know, like showing people how to grieve, telling them how to grieve shouldn't be a prescriptive thing because it's very specific to everybody. So this is like an offering of process of survival, really, which is not like, it's not like it's over. I have to do it every day. And sometimes I feel like, because it's so non-linear, sometimes I feel like I've gone way back to the beginning. It like it's really a life's work to carry it, you know.
Do you think this is the beginning of maybe some collaborative moments for you with regards to how you're going to share that experience going forward?
I think, you know, I'm really aware after many years of sort of working like this that really beautiful collaborations are a rare thing, like great friendships are rare. So grateful and appreciative to Ali and Jim because they are so amazing. And if I were to find that sort of connection in another gallery space, I'd be thrilled. Like, it's not a given. So I'd love to, you know, feel my way around what's right for me in that sense. With the public art, it's collaborative by nature because you need so many people to like make that happen. And I'm very like, if I like someone, I work with them for as long as I possibly can until they like just want to do something else. So like, I like tend to really stick with people if I like them. I like that consistency. So we've had the same people kind of on board with all the public art for years. And the guys in Berlin, you know, they're just amazing. It's, you know, these have become real friendships, not because we expected them to, but because they just have naturally. And that's like a real pleasure to me.
Do you see any similarities between the culture and the vibe of Berlin and of Liverpool in your experience so far?
Funnily enough, actually, there are some moments where I'm kind of, yeah, I think Taro, who renovates and restores the kiosk, was just here the last couple of days installing in the Albert Dock. And he just had the best time. There's also like that there's quite a lot more space, you know, to sort of maneuver. And I really like this idea of maybe a bit more possibility for like young creative people just to sort of make things happen in a way that feels like old London, you know, like that isn't just doesn't exist anymore, you know, like, and I'm sure you know what I mean by old London, but like if I ever find those spots in London now, I'm like, oh, you know, this is so rare because it's, I don't know, where things aren't like super shiny and, you know, glossy and like mega budgets or whatever. Like, it's just like people making art for the sake of it. And I've gone back to lecturing at Chelsea at the moment and I just love it because it's like working with all these young people who are like making art for the sake of it, trying all these things, like these amazing times where you can just stay really late on the campus and like use all the facilities. They're doing such incredible stuff. It's just so exciting to be around that again.
Can you see yourself maybe in Liverpool again exhibiting in the future?
I'd really love to. I'm really like, I'm such a, you know, I've been welcomed like so widely. And one of my sort of mentors, friends, is like my first boss, actually, when I worked at BFI, and he's from Liverpool. He's called Eddie Berg. He was the founder of Fact. He lives in New York now. And he's like really so excited that I'm here in Liverpool and everyone's like been so welcoming. Yeah. So I've felt very, very welcome, very comfortable and safe, which is key.
Well, I'm delighted you're here. And I'm absolutely made up that you've got two parts of your exhibition because it's two opportunities to go and see your work. Make sure you go down into the Albert Dock and have a look at the Fandango Discoteca and get yourselves along to Dorothy as well. It's well worth it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Annie Frost Nicholson there. Amazing exhibition in two parts, which is brilliant. I mean, she's got the exhibition which runs in Dorothy, All of Your Textures Live Inside of Me, until the 12th of April, and also the Fandango Discoteca, which is located in the Royal Albert Dock, and that runs until the 7th of April. Get yourself along there, Mick, and show us some smart moves in that booth.
I don't know about the smart moves in the Boo, but I definitely will go. And I'm really interested in going to the Dorothy exhibition. They do some cracking stuff there. And fair play to Annie. It's a difficult subject, and she's using what she's been through as part of her art, which is kind of what art is about, isn't it? What a lot of art is about. So fair play to her for that. I hope it's a big success. I'm sure it will be.
Fair play to the good folk down at Dorothy as well. They've got some amazing stuff going on there. And we've had them on the show before, but just popping along to see what they've got going on there. The window looks amazing. The enthusiasm that they've shown for this exhibition and other exhibitions, they are a real gem right at the heart of the community here, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I went to there about a year ago when they had Rough Trade as guest exhibitors, if you can call it that. It was really good. I bought an album there, and now Rough Trade are moving into Liverpool, aren't they? They're going to have a new store opening. So I don't know whether that had any part in the project, but now they've got good antennae, have Dorothy.
Absolutely. Well, that's just about it for us, again, for another episode. 50 episodes have flown by. So here's to the next 50 again. And for now, as we said, get yourself along to see Annie Frost Nicholson's exhibitions. Run until the 12th of April at Dorothy and the 7th of April in the Albert Dock. As ever, thank you so, so much for spending some time with us on the podcast. And Mick, one final word about maybe our search for a sponsor.
Yeah. Do get in touch with us. We are looking for a business sponsor. We've had Talk. We've had a handful of other companies. So we are looking for the right sponsor. And if you're interested, then get in touch with us. And we'll see you in the next Baltic Triangle podcast in a few weeks' time.
All the very best.